Blog Talk Radio.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
You can take a pencil, and even though you have the big markers, you can actually write in pencil. Even the front row can't see you. It's just different ideas that you want to remember to say. I love to cheat. Yeah, we're just talking about how to cheat life there. Compensation.
We call it life hacks. Works for me.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Well, welcome, everyone, to Life Interrupted Radio. Oh, my goodness. It's my Friday night. I love it. It's the start of my weekend. I hope it's the start of yours. I'm curled up here. You know, I've got my granddaughter's cup again, and I've curled up with my chamomile tea because I have my dear friend and mentor on tonight as our guest. I'm so excited, so I'm going to take a sip of my chamomile tea. Mm. Makes me feel good, just like my dear friend and mentor who's my guest tonight. I'm so excited. Can you tell? Anyway, let me introduce him so we can just jump right into it because I know we've just got a wealth to talk about. So his name is Michael Grinder. He's an author, speaker, teacher, and the world-renowned expert in the science of nonverbal communication, nonverbal leadership, group dynamics, advanced leadership building, commanding the stage and presentation skills, and I like to say that, like, your whole nonverbal IQ. How's that? You know, we hear of IQ and EQ. Michael's the master of that nonverbal IQ part, okay? We could talk about all of that, and we will. I promise we will. But I wanted to share some of Michael's story because, to me, it is amazing. Michael was a hyperactive child, and he graduated high school with a fourth-grade reading level. But he went on to earn a master's degree, become a runner-up as Washington Teacher of the Year. I know he's a published poet, and he's also the author of 13 books, business books, communications books, education books. He's well-known in the world of education, teaching teachers how to manage classrooms with nonverbal communication. You know, imagine that. I've seen it. It's like magic. Be up there as a teacher and not have to say a word and the kids do what you want. His books are used in schools around the world. And for me, I have the honor of calling him my mentor. He's been my mentor for the past 2 decades. I also have the honor of calling him my emotional brother. So welcome,
absolutely,
Michael.
Absolutely emotional sister. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Set it up, this little bit of the story, this idea of how someone from a childhood, when you go through what you overcame, as a child, to become an expert, it just seems impossible, yet you've proven it absolutely 100% possible. Can you share with the listener just a little bit of what your childhood was like?
It was a happy childhood. I was second of nine. We were raised initially in a log cabin outside of Detroit, Michigan. And
you have to share, though, your learning disabilities with the audience, because I think that's the most profound. I know that even to this day, as someone that's worked with you and helping you research your books and giving you feedback after you say, okay, I'm done with another one, read it. I'm always the eager one to read it, along with a whole other handful of people. You struggle still to this day with dyslexia.
Yeah.
And you grew up with, I love that little video you have of the little Mikey. And on the YouTube, it says, which one is the hyperactive child?
Yes.
There's no doubt when you see the other children all there, you know, just posing for the camera. And that must be little Mikey.
That must be him. And Sharon, your name is in all those books because of how much you've helped me. Thank you for being my mentor.
Oh, well, I love it. I just learn so much about when I read them, and we're able to give you feedback when I say, I think this needs a little more explanation. I love it because then I can just learn so much more. Tell the audience about what it was like growing up with ADD and dyslexia and the different learning disabilities, because I think a lot of people, either they have been it or maybe they have children going through it right now.
And if I may, the Mikey Grinder video on YouTube is intended to give hope.
It does. It's very cute, by the way.
Well, for me, I went to parochial school, and they back then they had what they called the snake. And whoever sat up front by the window was the smartest for that subject. Second one was in the second seat, and it snaked all the way through all the rows. I had a beautiful view of the hallway because I was by the back door. I could see everyone walking by, easily distractible. And I think one of the joys for me was I was always able to know these are people, teachers, principals, they're all the haves, and I'm a have-not. And the advantage of being a have-not is you got to read those haves because they can do things to you. So I was an enjoyable fella, a very, not quite the class clown, but contributed. And so I could always push just so far and I don't get thrown out. And then so it was enjoyable. I enjoyed going to school every day. In high school, I was played different sports. I was the ASB president. And then I couldn't run my next year for ASB president because my grades were too low. So I ended up with, as you mentioned, the fourth grade reading novel. I ended up confusing being a teacher with being a priest because all my teachers were priests. Uh-huh. And I wanted to be a teacher. I loved the idea of being a teacher. And even more so, I wanted to be a coach. Well, all my coaches, at least the majority of them, were teachers that were also priests. So I found a seminary that had no academic requirements, and they let me in.
Oh, dear.
And as soon as I got in there, Sharon, I realized people aren't going to listen to me from the pulpit. I'm ignorant. So I got a list of the most widely read 100 novels by doctors and lawyers in America. And I would buy the book, and I would walk into my closet 1 hour early each morning before anyone else woke up. They had a light on, and I taught myself how to read.
Yeah, and that's some of the amazing things about how you got from there to here now that surprised me is this, what I call a real discipline to learning and understanding where you're at and where you want to go. I think a lot of people have trouble with the discipline of every morning getting up and reading and teaching yourself these things. But you've taken it one step further. Besides teaching it, you integrated, in my mind, how the rest of us function or don't function and are able to take all of what I'll call those coping skills you learned, those disciplines and different things you learned about how to push it just so far and not get thrown out of class. That's, you know, man, that's reading people, I'll tell you. And what amazes me is how you've taken those coping skills and turned it into your life work.
And one of the things that I really found helpful was I have a limited amount of concentration back then. I'm much better now. So when I would read a page in the book, so I started with Dickens and Sir Walter Scott, and I would try to plow through a book. Well, all those listeners out there that are reading teachers, they know three words that you don't know on the page is usually the frustration tolerance level. That's when you quit. I had 15.
Wow.
So I had to pick which word to pay attention to. I found that the size of the book scared me, so I would tear a page out. I would just study that page. It usually took me an hour to get through two pages of trying to piece together what was going on. Then I would take a piece of paper, and I would go down to the breakfast area, and that's when we could finally talk. It was kind of a religious military environment, and it did me a world of good because I found the inner space program instead of the outer space program that ADHD people have. I would find a word that the other seminarians said, this is still in effect. Because when you learn the classics, palfrey, panelfly, and
some of those words are like, what?
Parapet don't work. So then I would take a piece of paper and I'd write the word on it, and then I'd stuff it in my clothing. And then during the day, I'd just get itchy, and then I'd pull out the word and I'd learn it. So I really became very fond of vocabulary terms, still have a pretty high recognizable vocabulary. In fact, that's one of the, I think, comedies is that as I write a book, then you and other people, and if I may, Barbara Lawson in particular and Mary Yannick, the three of you have adopted me, and I really do appreciate that you brought me along. But you tell me that I can't use that word. I got to bring it down to a level that is more on a reading level than on a professorship level. obsequious is not a word I'm not allowed to write, even though I know it.
Exactly. Although you do, I've heard you use it in your training, so it's okay. You like, you know, squeeze it in there somewhere.
Yeah, throw it in.
So with your books, I know, because we have worked to have some at what I'll say just the 101 level, the basic education, where do I start? And I, in all honesty, the vocabulary does get a little more heady and larger as you choose the books to sort of give them the 201 and the 301 level of the different things that people want to learn. A couple of weeks ago, I had the honor of being part of your group wizardry class, and then the week after that is what I call sort of the, actually more than 201, probably the 401 level or graduate school level of perception camp. What I love about your work, it's not just simple. It's you can take it as far as you want to go from your learning, so you can begin and understand. For me, the first thing, for years, just in all honesty, Michael kept telling me, Sharon, breathe. Just breathe. You know? I'm sorry, that was a hard one for me to learn. You learn patterns in your childhood, and mine in my family culture of breathing quite high. It wasn't until after, I don't know, was it five or plus years that finally sort of sank in, breathe, that I was able to go out and do the public speaking and the training that I wanted to do. And I find it interesting because a lot of the guests on Life Interrupted Radio, for whatever their story is about, that one technique is vital. Yeah. Last episode, we had a man who talked about recovering from bullying and how he found belly breathing and different breathing techniques to be helpful in his recovery when he starts to have a panic attack or anxiety. I know with other people that have been through life interruptions, stuck in what I call chronic fight or flight. That's one of the number one nonverbals you're judged on when you walk into a room. We don't consciously go, how's he breathing over there? But our subconscious recognizes whether they're breathing in a high fight or flight mode or if they're breathing comfortably, which to me often explains why very eccentric people can walk into the room and be very culturally different from everyone else in the room. Yeah. But if they're breathing comfortably, they're able to walk into the room and no one gives them a second look. It's just, they're fascinating.
And Sharon, you and I do a lot of coaching with executives. And one of the things we know is that if they're taller than average or a little heavier than average, they're concerned about coming across as dominant. And we know that if they're breathing low, no one sees them as tall or short or heavy. It's just a human being. So it's high breathing people are concerned for their own safety. Low breathing, it doesn't matter what your appearance is.
I remember a client I had one time, and he was about 6'7", and he kept worrying that he wasn't getting the information flow information up the food chain that he needed. And he thought it was due to his imposing size. But after spending a day with his group, I realized not at all. They adored this man. They didn't want to disappoint father kind of thing was going on. So it had nothing to do with his size.
That's why I like all the white of the hair. I don't have much up here, but here I have hair. And I get to be a grandpa now to lots of people. Whereas I used to want to, 20 years ago, I was adopted as fathers to people. Now I'm a grandfather to people. And it's really cool.
As long as I breathe low. Well, that brings up a question for me. We've got to take a quick commercial break. But this idea of going from father to grandfather, I want to talk about permission after we get back from this commercial break. Because I know as a grandmother, I have far more permission than I had as a mom. So everybody stay tuned. We're going to talk about permission and what that means with Michael, because he has a whole... When I learned permission from Michael and the true meaning of permission, it changed my life. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will be back after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. My theme for the year is Say Yes to Success. And guess what? Our annual International Conference and Business Expo that's coming up August 6th through the 9th, we're going to have not only a wonderful lineup of speakers and thought leaders like CNN's Soledad O'Brien or Matthew Knowles, the famous father of the famous Beyonce, and Jean Smart from Designing Women, but this year you are going to be part of the experience. This is one of, if not the only conference that will balance your experience between learning from the wisdom of great speakers to hands-on living it through laser coaching, journaling, and interacting and sharing with other conference attendees. Oh, yeah, and we have the best party in town on Saturday night, dancing till you drop to one of the best bands in Dallas. Visit eWomenNetwork.com for details and how you can be part of this life-changing experience as you embrace your yes to success.
Beautiful job, eWomen!
Back, everyone, to Life Interrupted Radio. We're here with Michael Grinder. He's an author, speaker, and the world-renowned expert on nonverbal communication, as well as two-plus decade mentor of mine. I love saying that, except then I go, oh, my gosh, I'm
going to
But anyway, and a dear, dear friend of mine. He's been sharing some amazing insights and about how you can overcome ADHD, that it really can become something good in your life with the discipline, and that it doesn't have to keep you back. So if you suffer from that or if your kids suffer from it, there's tons of hope. We were talking before the break about the concept of breathing and how important that is, but then we mentioned this idea of being a father and then a grandfather, and I want to talk about this idea of permission because that's immediately stepped into my mind because I know as a grandmother.
Yes, yes.
I have more permission.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the word permission, and both in the personal setting, like we're speaking of with the term grandmother, grandfather, but also what that means in your professional world too, how you can use permission, or
right.
how you
right.
know you have permission.
Yeah, and it is a big ball of whip that we have to look into and see which aspect we want to have our listeners and viewers go, oh, that applies to me. It actually started for me the year before the Berlin Wall came down, and there was a spray painted on the wall. I modified it a little bit, but it said, we are in love with the influence of power, and we need to be in love with the power of influence. And that got me thinking about what is the difference between power and influence, and especially because when I'm in Europe, America is seen as really oftentimes imposing power as opposed to sharing power.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, it's okay now, but 20 years ago, I used to always travel with a little luggage tag that had the symbol of Canada on it. And so the people thought, I must be from Canada, and therefore I got more permission to use the language and not know their language if I was from Canada as opposed to if I was from America. For me, permission comes into play when you look at the four levels of what we call professional development. The first one is you have to know your content. Then you need to know how to deliver your content. So the first one is verbal, and the second one is nonverbal. The third one is perception. And the last one is what we call permission. And there's a lot of models that only have three levels, which means that if you are not getting results after the seminar you went to, it must be you. You better come back in and learn. So I invented this to get rid of the concept of guilt.
Right.
So that if you're doing well as you can, then you have to redefine what is success. Traditionally, success is defined as did you get your results? With permission being part of your professional development, you can define success as how did I do based on the level of permission I had.
I think that's critical to think about, too, because a lot of people, guilt is huge. Oh, they walk off the stage or walk away from that team meeting just feeling terrible.
Yeah.
Guilt and blaming themselves, which, yeah. as we know, can spiral, be a self-sabotage type of thing. So the idea of permission is I did the best I could with the permission I had. And I also like to look at the idea of how do we know we have permission then? I know when I was the mom of teenage sons, my sister could say things that I could never say.
And that's why it really does take a whole village. And that's why people that have at least family in the same geographical area, and that's truer on the East Coast than it is here on the West Coast, it's so much easier. So I was very fortunate over the 4th of July. We had 34 members of our family joined together. We rented two houses, went to the beach, and it was amazing how you could have an aunt or an uncle or a grandma or a grandpa say something that you can never do as a mom or a dad.
And that works in teams too, folks. There are some people in the team you have high permission with, and some people in the team you don't have high permission with for a variety of reasons. And understanding the idea of permission and power are very, very different.
And I think what we're leading to is, how do we know if we have permission?
Yeah.
And so if you want, permission and breathing are connected, and those are the two most probably pinnacle concepts we've covered so far, and that is this. If someone is breathing very high and I'm communicating with them, my permission is probably low. And if someone is breathing very low, my permission is very high. So it's like a teeter-totter. And then if you want, you can apply that to yourself also. Sometimes if you're breathing high, whatever you're trying to accomplish, you might not have permission from yourself to try it yet. And if you're breathing low, then you have full permission to do it. And so that stretching to the discomfort level, expanding yourself, boy, just keep breathing low and you'll get more permission.
Right. And what I love about one of the trainings that you give is that breathing, I would talk myself into breathing low as I walked out there. But, you know, minutes into it, all of a sudden, the old habit creeps back in and you catch yourself breathing high.
Yeah.
And you stop, kind of reset the breathing gauge.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Start again. And I remember you had mentioned one time that breathing, unlike so many of the other nonverbals, is oftentimes reactive and not.
Yeah.
You can set it proactively, but you have to do a lot of course correction if it's a. If it's a bad habit of yours to be stuck in that chronic high breathing.
A couple of real quick, easy things, if I may offer to our listeners.
Sure.
One is take a little piece of gum and chew it so you get rid of all of the sugar, and then put it on the inside of your lip. And what it does is it activates the salivary glands. Then you don't have a dry mouth.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is a great tip, because I'm guilty.
The second thing is, at least I do it with my trainers that represent me, they have, within 2 minutes, they have to go visual. So continuing to make eye contact with the audience is much more difficult than being able to look at a PowerPoint or a flip chart. So if you can, train yourself within 2 minutes saying the thank you, the welcoming, and then say, and our topic tonight is, and then turn and start looking. And when you turn and look, breaking eye contact with the audience is a no-no in Presentation Skills 101, but it's a wonderful thing in Presentation Skills 201. Break the eye contact, look at the flip chart, and then if you want, you can take a pencil, and even though you have the big markers, you can actually write in pencil. Even the front row can't see you. It's just different ideas that you want to remember to say. The third thing is, I love to cheat. Yeah, we're just talking about how to cheat life there. Compensation.
We call it life hacks. Works for me.
Okay. And then another one is, take whatever hand you are, and let's pretend you're right-handed. Take your left hand, and if you would, just rest it just underneath your rib cage. And then you can feel your pulsate, that you're breathing low, because your abdomen will go in and out.
I love that one, because when I'm preparing for something, I train with my hand there, and then it becomes an anchor. I'm not consciously, when I'm up there doing the presentation, because I've trained with my hand there, I'm not consciously going in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've done that during the training phase, the preparation phase. And so when I hit the stage live, body just takes over and goes, oh, hand's there, breathe low.
Another one, if I may add to our list here, is find, because normally you're supposed to rotate where you look in your audience. And same thing if you were seated and there's seven people at a meeting table. So it's not based on the size of the audience. It's you have to make sure you rotate your eye scan. So find someone in the front right who seems friendly. Find someone in the back right, back left, and front left. And then what you do is you look over there, only look at the friendly eyes, and all you do is keep rotating so it looks like you're including everyone, but you're only looking at people that are going to feel, oh, they love me. They love what I'm doing.
Yeah, the ones that smile and and look very joyful to be there. Yeah, it's not the ones that look like, oh, my manager told me I had to come. Fascinate me.
Here you are. If you're that good, let's see how you do.
Exactly. Yeah. I think a lot of trainers can relate to that comment for sure. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, I can't believe it. Well, time flies with you, Michael. We're just having a lot of fun here. We have to take another quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to continue on this topic of, I just think it's fascinating. I know so many people talking more about going visual and what that means. I know that just now, if people watch the video portion of it, they'll be able to see the hand gestures Michael uses that explains the different concepts, and that is even going visual because we're able to remember, you know, breathing high and low permission, and then, you know, high permission, you're breathing low, and that helps embed that in our memory. So that's going visual as well.
Yeah.
So, Michael, when we come back, let's talk about all the different ways we can use going visual, and one of my favorite ones is within conflict. So just to intrigue the audience, the listener, to stay tuned through this quick commercial break, because if you've ever had conflict, Michael has some great ideas for all of the things we've been sharing and how it works with conflict. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to Life Interrupted Radio. We're here with Michael Grinder. He's an expert in nonverbal communication, nonverbal leadership, group dynamics, advanced relationship building, and we've even been talking about commanding the stage when you're speaking. We're just getting a crash course in how to communicate. And one of the things that I've learned from Michael over the years that have been powerful is the idea of going visual. And what does that mean? And why do I have to do it? Trust me, listen very closely to what Michael has to say right now and be ready to be amazed. You might be going, seriously? Really? But just like breathing and understanding permission, this one, you might say that too, but definitely do it. You will see amazing changes in your relationships, both professional and private. So take it away, Michael. What does going visual mean?
Well, actually, the idea of being visual versus oral is our biggest distinction we want to make. Too many times, especially when there's a conflict, we make too much eye contact.
Yeah.
And we're so trained in eye contact. And if I may respectfully, women are trained a little bit more than men. So if you watch 3-year-olds at preschool, if they're girls, would you like to come over? Come over. We'll have a cup of tea. Whereas the boys are on the ground going, wah, 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 with an object, and they don't make as much eye contact. And we wonder why, when they become men and women, why they're different in terms of when they get home from work.
But that also can lead to conflict when a woman sort of follows the guy around like, talk to me, you know, trying to make eye contact, chasing them around to make eye contact has its positives because it's good for relationship building. But when used the wrong way, it can certainly destroy a relationship.
And I think you're also mentioning about gender differences. Most people, most researchers would say that women will say at least a half, if not twice as many words in a day than a male does. So when they both are professionals, they come home usually one of them still has a whole lot of words to say, and the other one is all done with his words. So then we have to make sure, hey, you have to understand, how do you get this communication going here? And, of course, as a male, even though I know this, Sharon, I listen to fix instead of listen to contact.
That's a big bugaboo with a lot of women. I just wanted somebody to listen. I know how to fix it.
Guilty. But go on visual, and that's why whenever you can, if you have permission from the other person, and this is not something you can ask. You have to do it and then see, do they continue to breathe low? Mm-hmm. But if you can state whatever it is that the conflict is about on something that is a visual, so if it's a small group of people, then this would be appropriate. If it's a larger group of people, then a flip chart. Whenever you take the problem and you go visual with it, you are literally separating the volatility from yourself.
Right.
So it's almost like if two people are in a conflict, if they went to a third party, that person is like a mediator. Well, what if it's just you and another person? If you go visual with the conflict, then you can act like the mediator, like a third person.
Mm-hmm.
So the term we use for it, as you well know, because you're a walking advertisement for it, when people make eye contact, there's two parties involved, and so we call it two-point communication. If the two of them are looking at something, now you have one, two, three. And anyone who's ever gone to a doctor's visit, and the doctor looks right at you with high empathy and says, I hate to tell you this, but you have X. I mean, it's wonderful in terms of their intention, but the effect is that I now feel like you're talking not that I have X, that I am X.
Right. Ownership.
So if the doctor says, thank you for coming in today, listen, let's look at the X-ray right here. See, this is where the X is. And now we've separated the doctor from the volatility. Then the doctor has the option of going, you know what you and I are going to do about that? And so they join together against this evil thing that's on the paper.
Right. Absolutely. And it's great, too, for any that kind of communication, or I know you teach a part of your courses on giving feedback if you are the leader of a team and you have to give the annual review or the whatever that's called, and how you can use a pad of paper as,
absolutely,
as what I'll say, sort of the bad guy.
Yeah.
And you then work on the relationship of how are we going to correct these attendance problems or whatever they are. And I think that's really important, because maintaining the relationship, if that's important to you, talk about that, because I find it fascinating knowing if this relationship is important to you, how important it is to go visual.
Now, you have to make sure that you know when to do this. Usually in a personal relationship, it's really not the issue that you're really arguing about. Should the toilet paper come out this way or should the toilet paper come out this way? That's really not the issue. So it has to be clear in terms of what the issue is for this to make sense. Professionally, you can go visual much more often.
Right.
In a personal situation, you have to make sure, are we ready to problem solve or do we just want to exercise our lungs against each other for a while?
True. But let me share one that I use and I've shared that I love in private relationships after the exercising of the lungs is passed, is I always like to sit side by side, and because that way I can make eye contact when I want to by turning my head, or I can look out into the horizon, shall we say. And I always like to either have just not a lot of touching, but maybe the knee or the elbow. But, you know, there could still be some harsh feelings, and so you don't want to get, like, touchy-feely, but just enough that they can feel the connection.
Yes.
And then I just use the idea of talking about when we're at the problem-solving stage, talking about the problem, but putting it out in front of us instead of making eye contact, so it's sort of between us.
Yeah.
Like it's right there in between us.
One of us is the problem, and it's not me, for sure.
Right, but if we put the problem, and we're both looking out because we're sitting side by side, and we put the problem in front of us, and then I always just gesture towards the problem, and gesture to my partner, like, what are we, back and forth between him and myself, and then out to the problem, going to do about that. Yeah. It's such an easy way to talk about the problem without having that big problem with all of the harsh words or whatever the words were said still kind of floating in between us. This way, it just, that opportunity to use going visual takes it immediately to problem solving. And when you gesture out towards the horizon, mm-hmm. Many cultures make the assumption that that's sort of the future. And unconsciously, when we gesture and put the problem there, and how are we overcoming this problem to get beyond it, and mm-hmm. we gesture beyond the problem, oh, there is a future. We are moving through this problem to the future. So I just find the whole concept of going visual so vast and exciting. And I would love to hear how listeners use it, because, like I said, you got to use this to really see how powerful it is, because people will transform. I also want to send people to your website. I'll put it up on the blog. There was a video you have on your website, How the Kinesthetic Student Learns. That was fascinating to me, because being a high kinesthetic myself, I was like, yes, yes, yes. But also, what I loved about it is so much of that was going visual.
Yeah.
In ways that were not just a notepad or a flip chart.
Right.
There were other ways of doing it. And in my way, it's sort of imaginary, because the problem, we're just sort of placing it in a location, but it's not on a piece of paper or anything. It's just sort of an imaginary thing that we both agree is out there. And then in this How the Kinesthetic Student Learns video was using other sorts of props to help people understand what the message is.
We may want to make a distinction between what we call the right and the left brain, because they both have visual capacities, but they're different. On the right side of your brain, you see objects. On the left side of the brain, you see words. So when we talk about going visual, you have to make a distinction between, are we going to the left side of the brain, which is linear and sequential and logical, or are we going to go more the right side of the brain, which is going to be more emotional and holistic and gestalt, and you just kind of get it. So whenever you show objects, it's just easier for people on the right side of their brain to comprehend. Whereas if, like when we dimmed our fingers about when the person's breathing low, you have high permission. And when the person's breathing high, you have low permission. That's the right side of the brain. And that's where the emotions are. So the right side of the brain, visuals, are double the length of memory compared to the left side of the brain, words.
Now, when we go visual and we're not sure what the person prefers, do we do a little bit of both? Can we write a sentence and chicken scratch a doodle?
And also, if you can tell a story. Mm-hmm. A story goes to the right side of the brain, so go ahead and go visual, whether it be right or left side, words or objects, but then tell a story. Oh, they remember the story so much better than, what was that concept? But what an interesting story.
Oh, I know. I'm that way too. With so many things that I've heard or podcasts I listen to, I kind of remember the lecture, but I could tell you exactly what they said about the success their client had or some other breakthrough or even family stories. I remember far better than I can remember many other things. So, and I like to talk to people about, they don't have to be long stories.
No. Uh-huh.
They can be very, very short, like one or two sentences.
This last 4th of July, when the family got together, we had a big poster, and it had a hand planting a seed in the ground, and it said, family is the soil in which we grow the next generation.
Oh, wow.
And it had words and objects together. So much easier to comprehend.
That's fascinating about for both types of learnings and people from memory telling stories. What if we're talking about in a group and we don't know, we use all of them, and then also then let's take that down a step to communicating one-on-one, and how do we know?
Yeah, I think most of us are more trained in one-on-one communication than we are with group communication. In fact, there's only almost certain backgrounds, experiences that will lead you more towards the group dynamics than the one-on-one. Sports, military, large organizations, those are almost always group-oriented, and then they have to remember the individual. And a way to think about group dynamics, using a visual here, is for us to understand, and we're going to show you this diagram, It's going to be an easy diagram, but it explains an awful lot of information. What it does is...
Well, I want to show for the audio portion of the show, too, that it's a triangle. So take your pen and draw a triangle, and at the top put the letter P, and in the lower left put the letter I, and in the lower right put the letter G. And that will, it spells out pig, I know, but Michael will explain what it means.
Well, the triangle is the strongest geometric shape we have, because pressure on one side is experienced by the other two sides equally. So whenever you cross, like, a bridge, if it's an open grid, you'll see that it's triangle after triangle, because that's what supports each other. Well, the difference between one-on-one communication is that when you are looking at one-on-one communication, it's the person in charge, or one person, mm-hmm. and an individual. Group dynamics is when you take into account the person in charge, the individual, and then the group as a whole. That interplay, that interfacing between all three corners, that's group dynamics. And it's a little bit like juggling two balls versus three balls. It's just so much more interesting. And at the same time, the amount of models you have to say, how do I interpret that kind of communication? We just finished the World Cup for the ladies, and they did very well. And if you only watch where the ball is, you'll never understand soccer.
That's a good analogy. That's a great story.
You have to know where it's going to end up. What's the next one? So anytime you're interacting with an individual, watch the group. Every time you're interacting with a group, there's certain individuals you have to be aware of. And your peripheral sight has to be very acute. And you have to watch people that you're not looking at directly.
That's very true, and it's a skill that's acquired, folks. You just have to practice it. Some of you may have wider peripheral vision than others. You just practice it. It's amazing. And I find if you're a parent, it grows exponentially very quick.
Oh, yeah. If you have more than one child, you are constantly monitoring what's going on.
And you're also able to, after a while in a group, know the patterns of certain people. And you could say, oh, that's just John, or... Yep. Be ready to predict when a certain individual may or may not react to whatever's happening in the group.
You can have an inappropriateness by one person, doesn't spread, just like a child in the family. There's an inappropriateness of another person, we'll intervene right now.
I know, just a little side note, that when you've talked about conflict, of this idea, though, that sometimes as adults, we often revert to our adolescent or childlike behavior. So if we don't understand somebody's behavior, I often go, is this some sort of behavior that worked for them as a teenager or as a child? Because it's certainly not working here at 50.
No. And you could almost say that a teenage is a chronological time period, and adolescence is a mental time period. So feeling sorry for ourselves, feeling like victims, my goodness, we learn that so well as teenagers. And then whenever we feel sorry for ourselves, we go back to it. I have to schedule when I'm going to feel sorry for myself. And the best way I do it, and Sharon, I'd love to hear what you do. Mine is I make sure after a long haul of working consecutive days, I have breakfast with two guys, Ben and Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
Ben and Jerry, they join me for breakfast.
I'm not sure I would call it feeling sorry for myself, but I do absolutely know, as you like the phrase, seasons. I know the seasons, the short seasons of after a long trip or any trip, I need to make sure that I take 2 days and it's my time to get caught up on my inbox, my writing a book, doing something I want to do, and I'm not ready to jump back into client work quite yet. I need that own, because I'm give whole new meaning to the word introvert, folks.
Yeah.
So I need that downtime. And I want to go back to this idea of visual and talking one-on-one with someone. And I think, to me, I'm a little worried that one-on-one communication is a lost art. Everybody's busy texting I know my children, even though they're adults, they love to text me more than give me a phone call.
Yeah.
And I worry about a lot of people... especially our young people, losing the ability to have the one-on-one communication. So just share a couple of tips about what's really good, positive one-on-one communication these days.
Yeah. And you almost have to have uninterrupted. I think that's what we're talking about. The electronic age invasive to the point that, you know, you have what's called, you know, your position in life, where you go to work and you have to do certain responsibilities, and then you have your person. And it's almost like the X and Y axis from mathematics. Mm-hmm. And we're overdoing in terms of doing our position, I text you, blah, blah, blah. Where's the person? You know, we need that personal touch. You know, just it's so important to pick up the phone and talk. Better yet, look at each other, like through Skype. So much more important than it is text. At the same time, text really does have a wonderful place where you're just trying to get back and forth with a quick message. So as long as you have a build up enough almost emotional chips in the relationship, mm-hmm. a quick back and forth really works. I love when I'm driving home safely to call on the speakerphone and ask Gail, how's the home front? Because to walk in that door and not know what we have in front of us, whether it be house guests I didn't know, or the cat just did the curtains in the living room, or, you know, we have a painter's coming tomorrow, we have to move furniture away from the walls, any of those things. I really love knowing before I get there. Otherwise, I go home to my person, and I may have gone to my person too soon. I may still have to have some responsibility for my position.
I think that a lot of people fall into that trap of, since we're always connected, unlike before, with connected to work. We covered so much there with that as well. Let's, in the last few minutes we have together, I know this, I'm opening a whole big thing too here, but he's got a great book on it called Charisma, The Art of Relationships. But I do want to touch on your concept of cats and dogs.
Yeah.
This is a great analogy that people, actually, I texted you one time. I was in Starbucks and the table next to me, you know, I heard this talk about cats and dogs, and your husband's a big cat. So tell us, what's a cat and what's a dog?
Well, we were trying to think of some way to describe people without using a lot of psychological jargon. And psychological jargon is wonderful if you're trained in it. But pop psychology oftentimes has connotations that we don't really mean, and you kind of pin it on someone, and then they get stuck with that label. So we're trying to think of, how can you teach people how to be sensitive? We realized, everyone knows about household pets, dogs and cats. So why don't we take dogs and cats' knowledge and move it over to people? And it really works out well. So you have a variety of dogs, from the Labrador, Golden Retriever, that is just a friend. They'll be very cooperative. They'll do whatever you want, and they want to please you. And then you have a variety of cats. And at the top end, you have the Siamese. And the Siamese see you as a member of the staff.
And, yes.
And when they're ready, please, I'm ready to go outside now. You can open the door for me. Thank you very much. Whereas a dog would never presume or impose on you. So taking the concept of dogs and cats and applying them to people, you can actually start understanding, usually the ones we have trouble with are the cats. And the ones that we don't have any trouble with are the dogs. And so if you're a manager, you manage the cats. And when people get promoted, you have to be very careful. Try not to work for a boss that's promoted past their level of catness, because they won't protect you. The outside pressures come right back into you.
Yeah, let's define that a little bit. What do you mean by their level of catness? They revert to dog?
Well, if you have someone who does very well on one level of the organization and they're going to promote that person, when they promote that person, a lot of times you're promoted based on what you did well previous. But when you become in charge of people, it's not the same set of skills that you need that you had when you were previously on the lower level. When you manage people, there's times when if people are all functioning well, you presume that they're just high dogs and we're going to get along, ask them for favors, operate from influence instead of power, go visual. Then there's other times when if the group is not functional overall, it's usually the cats in the group that need to be managed. You can't go from your dog and say, you know, I'm offended by what you just did.
No, that wouldn't work.
No, to a cat, they're going to go, who are you? And so you have to manage from your cat, which means don't put your heart on your sleeve. operate from your position. So almost position and cat go together, and person and dog go together.
What if we work for a cat and we're a dog? It's so easy to be offended by a cat. You have a great tip on what we can do if we are a dog, or know that we're at least partially a dog, maybe not a golden retriever, but we're somewhere
German,
in between.
German Shepherd.
Oh, okay, German Shepherd. And we work for a cat, and we might say Siamese, or some people might even say tiger.
So, yes.
What's your tip on, okay, what? How do we survive?
Whenever you're going to work with a cat, grab a Q-tip from your bathroom, put it in your pocket, and pretend that Q-T-I-P stands for quit taking it personally. So whenever you're going to interact with a cat, yes, you're going to be offended, and they're going to be oblivious that they did it. So don't assign that they intended to do that to me. They're just doing whatever their position is, and sometimes they don't have a lot of their person. When you are working with a cat, the more you go visual, the more you stay away from being offended by them. The other thing is, if you can understand their different levels of what makes them up as a human being, and if you can understand their values, if you can address them through their values, that's so much more helpful than just doing a suggestion. Example, your boss is going to make a decision. The boss doesn't have all the information. The boss is prideful. The boss doesn't want to be told that it doesn't have a lot of the information. So there's a scene in The King and I where the school mom from Great Britain is approached by one of the king's wives and says, we have people coming, dignitaries from another land. And the king needs to understand protocol. And the school mom says, well, I'll go to the king and I'll explain it to him. And the wife says, you can't do it that way. You have to be gentle. And just kind of hint at it. Well, what they're saying is, if the school mom goes to the king and says, I understand you need my help, that would fail. But if you go to the king and say, I'm sure that your high value is that you want your country of Siam to be represented well with the Western world, here's some things that you would know best how to implement. And anytime you can throw in that phrase, you would know best, the cat feels, thank you for recognizing my dignity.
That actually works with a lot of people. Even if you think they're not cats, throw it in every so often. It's a great line.
You and I do it with each other once in a while, and it works really well.
I know. Even when you know it and when you hear it, still feels good.
Yeah, thanks.
And that's one of the fun things with all the nonverbals that Michael's taught me over the years and that I use and I don't even think about anymore. Sometimes I'll catch myself doing one and I'll just giggle to myself like it's so integrated into my world now and such a profound change that it made. Just put your toe into the water of understanding nonverbal communication. Some people call it body language, but it's so much bigger than that, as you've heard today. You can have really amazing results just by a base understanding of nonverbal IQ as well as the emotion. And it goes in tandem with emotional IQ as well as your intellectual IQ. My goodness, Michael, thank you so much for being my guest. I want any last thoughts? I know we've just sort of jumped all over the map because when you and I get together for breakfast, this is just how it goes, folks.
So
you're you're sort of watching one of our breakfasts without being at the cafe. Any last thoughts, things that you would like to share and then tell the audience on how to learn more about you and your work?
I think the area that might be the elephant that we need to bring out in the open is the word manipulation.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
If you're going to be in the world of communication, you're in the world of manipulation. But here's the difference. You're not trying to manipulate someone else. You're trying to manipulate what you do with your eyes, your voice, your body, and breathing. If you can manipulate yourself, you can influence others. And there's some days I can't manipulate myself enough to get the impact I want with other people. So yes, we are in the world of manipulation. Ourselves.
Well, and I also like to look at it, Michael, and you can disagree if you want. I don't view it any differently because I'm trying to enhance my message using hand gestures. So if they're not getting the meaning with my voice tone, they're getting more meaning than just the words. With making eye contact about relationship or saving the relationship by going 3-point, going visual as you discussed. I look at it as if I'm in France, I speak terrible French. But they really appreciate the effort of trying to connect and trying to communicate.
Yeah.
When I was in Switzerland, I had no clue. That was totally, completely 100% foreign to me. But with a smile and some eye contact and some
Low breathing,
but an open upward palm gesture. People were more than willing. So I look at, instead of, we can say we're in the world of manipulating ourselves, but I also look at it as, if I'm coming from the intention of connection, and I'm coming from the intention of, I want to make sure that we both understand each other. I want to make sure that there's communication here and not the big M word manipulation. Then to me, I'm just learning to speak a different language or an enhanced language versus doing something to someone.
I'm with you all the way. The intention is absolutely key. And then the question is, do I have permission from the other person for them to even want to know my intention, or they just want to get things?
Yes. Sometimes people just, you know, it's a business transaction and you don't need any of the other stuff. Just go for it.
Yep.
So how can the audience get a hold of you, Michael?
MichaelGrinder.com. Real easy. Lots and lots of free things. We welcome you to our front door. Come on inside, look around. The number one place that people go is free resources.
And there's a lot of great free resources there, whether you're in business or in education, because Michael works in both worlds, both the corporate world and the educational world, where he teaches, works with school districts on to become better communicators to the students, which is just amazing to me that work, too. It's had so many profound effects in schools these days. And so, everyone, it's michaelgrinder.com. I'll have it up on the blog if you forget it, but it's pretty simple, just his name. It does look like Grindr. Though, I want to say it does look like Michael Grinder, if we can say that, although he pronounces it Grinder, everyone. Thank you so much, Michael, for being my guest on Life Interrupted Radio today. It's just been an honor and a pleasure. I know, folks, we kind of jumped all over the map, but you got so many nuggets you can walk away with, and I'm sure you'll walk away with one and use it and just go, wow, totally worth it. So thank you, Michael.
Nice to be with my mentor, Sharon.
Same with you, Michael. Go to michaelgrinder.com. It looks like Grindr. Look at some of his books. There's something for everyone, as well as the free resources. Everyone, go have a great weekend and have a great week, whatever your adventures, and join me right here for another episode of Life Interrupted Radio, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Friday night.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. This episode is brought to you by MindfulnessInActionBook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by MindfulnessInActionBook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at MindfulnessInActionBook.com. Listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. My theme for the year is Say Yes to Success. And guess what? Our annual International Conference and Business Expo that's coming up August 6th through the 9th, we're going to have not only a wonderful lineup of speakers and thought leaders like CNN's Soledad O'Brien or Matthew Knowles, the famous father of the famous Beyonce, and Jean Smart from Designing Women, but this year you are going to be part of the experience. This is one of, if not the only conference that will balance your experience between learning from the wisdom of great speakers to hands-on living it through laser coaching, journaling, and interacting and sharing with other conference attendees. Oh, yeah, and we have the best party in town on Saturday night, dancing till you drop to one of the best bands in Dallas. Visit eWomenNetwork.com for details and how you can be part of this life-changing experience as you embrace your yes to success.
Beautiful job, eWomen!